Hello and welcome back to another episode of For the Love of a Franchise. I'm your host, Paul. Up front, I'm going to apologise. This is late. It should have been December. As I said on my previous, on our previous show, should I say, over on Biff Pal Bam, I've been struck down with the dreaded COVID for the last couple of weeks. So everything's kind of been pushed back a little bit.
He's got the leg. He's infected.
So yeah, I was not anymore, but as we mentioned at the end of the last episode, it is time for a new franchise, and we are taking a trip to Bandcamp as we review the American Pie franchise. We're not going to do the stupid straight to DVD ones. We're going to do the four that consist of the main cast. And as you can hear, I am joined by my fellow pie fuckers, Josh.
Evening.
And Tony.
Hello.
Wasn't expecting that lead in, were you?
Hello, pie fucker.
we're here to start with the first one. So that was released in 1999.
That's the same age as me.
So that's kind of what I was going to touch on, because obviously for me, that was kind of as I was coming to being an adult. I was 15. I'd got a year left at school at that point. So it was kind of a seminal time for those. You always have those kind of films, don't you, when you get to that age that sort of mean more to you probably than they do for a lot of other people.
Yeah.
And this was one of those coming of age films anyway. As such, so that's why it's kind of stuck with me, and I just felt it was time for us to do something a little bit more out of the box when it comes to this type of thing. We've kind of touched on action, sci-fi, very heavy stuff so far. It hasn't really been light stuff, and I just thought, you know what, it means something to me, so I'm gonna pick that for my next choice. So as you said, Josh, you were being born that year. So I don't know what it kind of meant to you, these films. Probably not a lot.
You know what, actually? You'd be surprised in the meant it a bit, as in, basically, this was the franchise that all my other mates watched and never appealed to me. Don't get me wrong, though. I watched coming-of-age teen comedy, like, basically this kind of film, but it wasn't this... It wasn't American Pie, basically. And I watched stuff like this, but American Pie was the franchise that basically passed me by. And I basically never watched it, but I was aware of the majority of the references, like the pie fucking, the Stifler's mom. I even knew Elizabeth Shannon. Like, I could literally pick her out, but not from American Pie. And I could pick quite a lot of the actors out in this, but not from this franchise. But yeah, it was one of them that just basically passed me by. And a lot of people go, you are a massive film fan and you've never seen this franchise. What the fuck?
Yeah. And Tony, I'm sure you probably picked it up for the same reason as I did. With
I was already getting on a bit when the first one came out.
Yeah. But of course, we had the link with Alison Hannigan. Yeah.
She was the one I probably knew that was in the cast when the film came out.
Yeah, definitely. So likewise for me, obviously Mina Savari was just kind of coming into the public eye, wasn't she? But yeah, for the most part, Eugene Levy's career had kind of disappeared at that point. Yeah. And this was kind of the big thing that brought him back to the public eye, and the rest of them.
I saw a lot of his stuff on VHS and on telly in the sort of 80s. He worked alongside John Candy even.
Definitely. And the rest of them were all fairly new. And we have other connections to this film. I'm not sure whether you're aware, probably Tony, you are, about Jason Biggs being married to Elizabeth Mullen, Jenny Mullen, sorry, from Angel. So there was another link there. So it's a strange franchise that we've got a few links to it. Jenny Mullen, for anybody that doesn't know, was in Angel, which was how me and Tony met. And met her a few times, didn't we, over the years when she came
very,
over.
Very huggy.
Yeah, yeah.
She was hugging everybody.
Yeah, so there are a few links, as we say. So I suppose we better dive into the film itself. And I want to start with, I think that opening scene pretty much sets the tone for the whole franchise. The bootleg porn with the sock is pretty much start as you mean to go on.
Well, the first couple of things I got joined down are the noise and boner.
Yeah. And we'll touch on Jason Biggs' boner later on. Because it makes a return. But it's something that I think I'm going to bring up quite a lot. It is the soundtrack. For me, it's for a modern soundtrack that's modern music that's been put together by songs that probably already existed for the most part. I love the soundtrack on these films. Even though it's not my normal type of music, because it's kind of that late 90s, early 2000s kind of grunge scene, like Blink 182 and stuff like that. But I think it fits so well with this film. I think it's a great put together soundtrack for what it is. I suppose, again, we'll touch on different actors as we go along. It's such a shame about Tara Reid, because in this, she's so pretty for a start, yes. Naturally pretty, and should have had a career in front of her. Mm. And it just
other
didn't
than
something. Yeah, exactly. And that's what her career has become. And as we go further into this, we'll see that for a lot of the time, she didn't appear in the later American Pie films either. Until the final one. I think this is her only appearance until the last one. She doesn't appear in the middle two.
No.
Which is a real shame. And it was just very strange how that played out.
She's very pretty, very attractive. And
yeah.
A twinkle in the eye and...
Yeah,
and get a nice turn. Yeah,
yeah. We get that first inconspicuous appearance of Michelle, with her bandmates playing their instruments backwards, in the hallway, which it totally doesn't make you think of what's to come later on in the film.
I've got that written down.
I'm just going to straight up say, I knew those kids when I was in school, and I won't lie, I was part of them to a point. And some of those kids can be cool. I'm just saying it now. I'm getting it out there. Bang kids can be cool.
Yeah.
Not all of them, but some of them.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. My little boy's in the school band at the moment. He's only 9 though, so we've not got that far. And he's playing a guitar, so he can't do anything with that.
Oh, he was one of the cool kids then. That's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. and I really do feel that this is really the prototype of all those teen gross out movies of the early 2000s. If this hadn't come along, I don't think that would have become a genre that it did.
No. Well, it was the noughties porkies, really. I don't know, the 90s didn't really, they kind of veered away from it a bit, I suppose. There was one or two, you had the sort of, I saw South Park on telly in the South Park, but there was no real sort of teen sex comedy stuff, I don't think, in the 90s.
No, definitely not. And as I say, this is why this became such a thing for me, because there hadn't been that sort of thing in my growing up years, and this kind of came at the right time. And I do think the opening scenes really explain everything you need to know about the film.
The franchise in general, not just the film.
Yes, it lays out every single character. You know exactly what they are from the word go. You get Stifler turning up in that scene in the hallway. And you just know that's Stifler.
Yeah, and there's just so many little things like the discussion about Ariel being hot and it's finding animated characters hot and things like that.
Yep, yep. The lifetime supply of pantyhose is another great line that always makes me laugh. We get that introduction to the Shermanator as well. Who doesn't learn his lesson across the whole franchise, because of course he comes back and he's still trying to get away with that same thing throughout the franchise, and he does get his comeuppance later on in the film, when he pisses himself in front of everybody. So that's great. And then we get that first kind of setup, don't we, of the party, where we kind of learn everybody's relationships and kind of what they're aiming for. The cup, the spunk in a cup,
is
just great, a great gag. I love that. The one thing I will bring up, and it's been something that I've known about for years, but the scene the scene when Jim walks towards Nadia, there's a boom mic right in shot. It's an absolutely awful gaff because it's literally, and it was something I learned about probably 15 years ago.
I remember seeing that.
No, it's right in the shot as he's walking. You know when he does the slow-mo walk towards the camera and he falls over the sofa as he's walking towards her? There's a boom mic to his right-hand side. To our left-hand side.
I was just trying to process how old the computers were in that sequence.
And then I said, to be fair, the female cast probably had better careers than the male cast did. Obviously, Mena Suvari had a big career. Alison Hannigan had a big career at the time, and it didn't seem to go anywhere. She still had a massive career. How I Met Your Mother came not long after she moved on from Buffy. These films were still going. It just feels like, obviously, Natasha Lyonne as well has had a fairly strong career. Whereas you look at the likes of Jason Biggs, who had a few more of these kind of films over the years, but his career didn't really go anywhere. Chris Klein obviously had drink problems. We know that. And not until he, for all of us, made a guest appearance in The Flash a few years back. Mm. His career hadn't really gone anywhere.
And I didn't even twig it was him for like a couple of episodes.
No, exactly. Thomas and Nicholas has had a bit of a career beforehand. He'd obviously had a few child roles. I know he was in a baseball film.
Was he probably the Bad News Bears remake, maybe, was he?
I can't remember.
Sandlot, or maybe The Sandlot, perhaps. Or something.
Yeah. But other than those, they didn't really have careers. So the female cast members actually did, despite what I said about Tara Reid, the rest of them actually did have bigger careers than the male cast members. I did have to say that everybody knows a Stifler. There's always one in the group.
Usually there was.
I don't know. Tony might agree with who was the Stifler in our group. We won't mention his name. not that he'll be listening to this, but I think we'll probably both agree on who it was.
Right. Well, in fact, it's probably two, because there was somebody from Bristol we know as well.
Yeah, that was who I was aiming at. Also, I didn't realise that Ryan Reynolds' brother-in-law was in this until I watched it this time.
Who was that?
Ryan Reynolds' brother-in-law. Blake Lively's brother is in this.
Ah!
Playing the guy in the choir that takes over.
Ah, right, that's him, is it?
Yeah, which I didn't realise.
It was the one out of these early ones, cameo that I spot, it was Casey Affleck popping up.
Yeah, and I was always surprised that they didn't cash in on that more. Because he comes back in one more film, I think, but literally only these like 5-minute cameos.
Yeah.
Which I was really surprised. I'd actually got that in my notes as one of the things that I was surprised with. Then we see John Cho, whose career is obviously probably the biggest of the lot, I would say, with Star Trek coming along.
And he's not actually got a character name in the credits other than sort of somebody dies.
Yeah, it's the MILF guy.
Yeah, that's it, MILF guy. That's what he's called.
But weirdly, he then turns up in the choir.
Yes.
Later on, randomly.
Yeah.
Which I thought was quite funny. Probably one of my favourite bits of the film, the speech, but with Chris Klein doing the like the subtitled Melvin of the speech, like he's like it doesn't match. I find that hilarious every time I watch it. I love that. The other thing I will say, the four leads are so distinct in character. It's just really it really is well written, and it's really one of its strong points is that they are so specific in what they are. They're not
because like their end goal is the same, but their reasons for it are all very different as well.
Definitely. Then we get a return of our favorite person, Montage Man, makes an appearance, but this time it's got a great soundtrack. So you can't go wrong. They've got Montage Man right this time. I really like, as I said at the top of the show, the soundtrack just really works, and it's great that they get it right with the montage as well. We spoke about Natasha Lyonne earlier. I just got it down that she was really a surprise hit, and while she's not a big part of the story, she is absolutely comedic genius in this.
When she's on screen, she's just so funny. So deadpan as well. It's just brilliantly done.
Definitely. The choir section is such a left turn. It completely takes you by surprise. It's not what you're expecting from him at all. And then all of a sudden he just turns up at choir and it's like, oh, so that's how you're going to do it, is it? And it just really, really makes me laugh. Then obviously we've got the... for Finch or Shipwreck, as he's known as. The large cock story.
I knew him at school as well. Why the fuck?
The large cock story is definitely the sort of thing that could easily happen at school. Once that story gets started, it's just going to go round, and it's going to...
Yeah, well, see, what one of the weird thing for me growing up was I went to an all-lad school for senior school. But literally, like, you walk to the edge of our school, cross the road, and there's the all-girls school. And, like, basically, we'd all, like, congregate after school, even though we'd be let out half an hour apart. So we'd all congregate. And stories like that would get passed around. You go, oh, have you heard about him? He's got a massive one. He's great, him. You know, he's been with an older woman as well, you know him.
It's definitely something that would happen. What I want to know is, why do the choir only sing one song? It's just the one song.
Cost, probably.
Probably. This was something I was going to ask you guys, because I broke out my box set from like 20 years ago for watching this. And my copy of this film is called The Ultimate Edition. Now, I know at the time when it was first released, the pie scene was different and you didn't see as much. Now, I'm not sure what version of the film you guys saw.
Well, I actually picked up a box set on Amazon. I'm just having a look now on the shelf what it says.
So my scene is him on the tabletop actually banging the pie.
Seen that, but that's not the version I saw. I must see like the bare basic version, because I just found it on Now TV.
I
thought there was a version where he's like holding the pie.
Yeah, that's the toned down one.
The version I had him, his dad comes in, and he's there on top of the kitchen table.
Yeah, so that's the, and I don't think I've ever seen the basic one.
I think that's the. I'm sure that was the version was at the cinema, because me and my mate went to the cinema, and
they replaced it.
Yeah.
Afterwards, yeah.
So this now, is the first time I'd seen that laying down flat version.
And I'm not sure whether the original version might have been the better version.
I think it is. It's the less is more kind of thing.
Yeah. Because the full gross out one is kind of. Like, he's talked about these things, but we've never actually seen him do anything like that.
Mm.
And it does feel a little bit too over the top. So I thought the Bible thing with Casey Affleck was probably the least likely thing to happen out of all the weird things in this film. That's the thing that I probably think probably wouldn't happen.
Like nobody's accidentally found that in all those years.
Yeah, exactly. Or that they'd even leave it in the skull.
Yeah.
You'd put it somewhere else, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So that was just
being blokes, if anywhere, there'd been like in the venting above the men's toilet or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Not
in the library.
Yeah, exactly. And then we get to kind of the middle bit of the film, and Eugene Levy kind of takes over for a little while, because every scene that he's then in is he just absolutely tears the screen apart. You got the scene when he brings the porn in, which is great. And then you've got the scene on the stairs when he's talking about playing ping pong, or to playing tennis. Do you want a partner to bang your balls against? It's like he just really does take over.
Still doesn't see his end.
Yeah, and I have to say, while I find the Oz story kind of sweet in the end, it does feel a bit stretched, like the whole "will they, won't they" kind of thing.
Yeah,
like,
it takes a bit of time to get going, doesn't it? I think.
And you get that scene with where she kind of sees him wandering off after she's been to see him play lacrosse, and she gets angry with him, but it's Stifler. It's not Oz.
Yeah, that bit pissed me off. Like, that's just a bit like, but the thing is, that would happen at that age in your life.
Yeah.
Like, someone will take something the wrong way, and just because you're there and they are so angry, they will just go for you, even though
Because we have the benefit of seeing the uncomfortableness in his face that maybe she doesn't quite see from across the field.
Yeah.
And then I suppose we get what I would call the quintessential scene from this film. I wouldn't say the pie fucking is, despite the fact that the name is American Pie. The scene in his bedroom.
Yes.
He's just brilliant from start to finish.
Yeah.
And the big surprise, because it's the only bit of nakedness in the whole film.
Yeah.
For what people think is this gross out teen comedy, there is literally one scene with boobs, and that's it throughout the whole film.
Shannon does look incredible.
Yes, she does. You got the classic jump over the fence as he runs back and lands on his face, which is just brilliant. We get the
Blink, Bueller, isn't it?
Yeah, we get the Blink 182 cameo in this scene as well, which is hilarious. And I have to say, I completely relate to Jim.
I would know him from Adam, so...
No, I completely relate to Jim. He is completely awkward in exactly the same way that I was. Not that I blew my load like that.
boy, Paul.
And this is where Jason Biggs Boner makes a return. And there's no way you can hide that. That is clearly not meant to be there, and that is him. And it amazes me. This is only halfway through the film.
Mm.
And it just keeps going. And then it becomes the Allison Hannigan show.
Yeah.
From that point onwards.
Well, actually, she, of course, gets the iconic line in the film as well.
Yeah, exactly.
But she's so sweet as well, isn't it? And she's a great performance. And that's why when we get to that bit towards the end of the film, it's a complete shock, because she's such a sweet, demure character comes out with that.
Yeah, exactly. I think everybody knows that feeling of having a bad stomach when they're out and having to run to the toilet and hoping no one else hears you.
It just completely destroys his reputation.
Yeah.
In one moment in the toilet, that whole room will just collapse.
Yeah. Then we get the old trope of the repeating coach, when he just keeps repeating what the other
It's actually really funny. I forgot it was in there, and it's actually really funny. It's irritating.
Yeah.
Funny.
Yeah, definitely. Then we get that final speech from Jim's dad about banging the balls together. Love that. We get a really dodgy covers band, which I find funny. I don't know why. I don't even know why I find it funny, but it's just that lead singer. It's just so weird.
The top bands are funny, though, like that in films.
Yeah. Yeah. Then everybody turns on him. Like, he's so, they've been so set on doing this one thing. And then they're like, no, don't really care. I'm not doing it. Forget it. And it does turn really quickly. Not in a good way. But then we get the hilarious scene of the Shermanator pissing himself.
For Sherman here. I really felt sorry for Sherman.
Yeah, it's not nice, but he kind of does deserve it. So, in one way, it's not nice, and in another, he does get what's coming for him. Stifler's little brother's two cameos are great. Farkas is just brilliant coming out of a kid of his age, and of course, like. They actually did bring him back. He did one of the spin-offs.
Yeah, he did, didn't he?
Yeah, which was great. And in the end, it all works out for him. Yeah. They all kind of get what they want. And we get that, as you say, Tony, that famous line, this one time at Bandcamp. It's just
her delivery is just so good. It's so dead man, a matter of fact.
And it's the fact that it's not even, you're not even expecting her to say anything, because she's kind of focused on Jim kind of staring away into the distance. Yeah. And then she says it, and she doesn't even say it on screen. She's off screen when she says it. And then it pans to her after she said it. Yeah. And it's just, it's great. And obviously at this...
I was going to say, that just a double whammy when she actually gets into bed. I think, blimey, she's right.
You get the comedy bounce off the bed. Yep. The comedy bounce off the bed always makes me laugh as well. And of course, we get a legend being born in Stifler's mum at the end of the film, which you totally don't expect. And then she's all of a sudden there, and all her stories come true, all the made up ones, just brilliant. And it all comes to a bittersweet end, because they're all going off in different directions, which I like. And I have to say, these films are, most people would say these films are gross out comedies, but it does have heart. And it does feel like an old school comedy.
That's what makes most gross out, or comedies, but definitely gross out comedies. It's when it has heart to counteract that constant gag.
Yeah.
Yeah, though, I mean, Chris Klein's character, is it Heather, the girl? It's Heather, isn't it?
Yeah.
Their arc is just great. It's so sweet. Because it at the start of the film, when you first meet him, you would never expect him to go down that route.
Right.
And he just hits it off with this girl immediately, and he's just completely smitten by her.
Yeah, definitely. Anything else you guys want to add before we wrap up?
Just a couple of observations on me. For me. One, we're talking about Chris Conner. Lacrosse is something we don't see very often. It's about as obscure you can get in it. It's lacrosse up on screen. It's always basketball or American football. Teen comedies, the school stuff. So that was a refreshing change to see kind of obscure sport like that in there.
Could you imagine if they'd have made it over here and it was like the Northeast Darts team?
Just imagine Stifler at the hockey, can't you?
Yeah. Yeah. Get us a pie, wait and love. Level 20.
the other one I joined, Danny, was another Eugene Levy reference. I've just been quite, hey, big boy, in quote.
With the eyebrows as well. That's the... Oh, those eyebrows. and it always makes me laugh, because that final speech when they're standing in front of the portrait
Yeah.
We went and did a VIP tour at Universal not long afterwards, and they got it in the prop warehouse. We walked past it, and it was sat on the wall. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me that they've kept it. So you could tell at that point that they were planning on doing more with it because they kept stuff from it. So it was that it for you, Tony?
That was the other thing I wanted to point out, yeah.
Yeah, anything from you, Josh?
Just mainly I can't iterate enough how glad I am that you've picked this franchise because, like I said, it's something that passed me by and I'm actually... with a lot of franchises that I've not really bothered with, like I can never get the incentive to go, do you know what, I'm going to sit down and watch them. And this would have been one of those for me. I probably would have gone till my own kids were about my age having not watched this franchise, so I'm made up that I have done now. But I can only reiterate what we've already said in that, like, the balance of the comedy and the actual heart of this film is fantastic in that basically Jim is who I was at school. Nervous, awkward, and just basically a massive dork. But like as I've grown older, Oz is who I want to be in how I go with relationships and things like that. And the balance of that comedy and genuine heart that they've put into this film, it's just fantastic.
Yeah, that's right. You need a nice cosplaying girlfriend, mate, now.
Do right, lad. Do right.
Right, should we do our final scores then? Who wants to throw theirs in first?
Yeah, I'll throw my thoughts first. For me, it's a lot of fun revisiting this. I haven't watched this. I think I may have watched it maybe once in full on telly since it came out, but I've seen it maybe twice over the years. And it's just nice fun to go back and watch it again. I say some of the stuff is standing out as not aged well, like the tech, but the story's great. The story's timeless. Characters are great. I have to say that Ali's my standout just because of that twist just into Michelle's character come the end of the film and the way she sells it. And for me, I've got to go into the 80s for this. I'm probably about 85% for me.
Josh, how about you?
Oh, I quite easily and happily go higher than that. I'd go right to the 89, 90 mark. Just because I want to save room for, like, in case they do get better, without spoilers from you, Paul, because I know you've seen them all. But I want to leave room in case they do get better. And I think, like, sort of 89, 90 is nice. And if they get shitter, I can start going down. And if they get better, I can go a little bit up.
Yeah. So for me, this is one of those films that I can watch over and over again. As I say, my box set is like, I've got a box set with the first two in. It's not even, it's not sticky. So my box set, obviously, it's from 2002, my box set. So it's the first two films.
Mine's a reissue. I picked up off it's got the four movies in it, and I think it was about 2013. So
So my box set is just over 20 years old, and you can see it's been used. The box is battered. It's quite clearly been watched a lot, and I will keep going back to it. But I hadn't watched it for a while. Obviously, with a small child, it's not the sort of thing you put on during the day. So it hadn't been watched for a while, but I'm glad it was still in the cupboard after clearing out a load of films. It was one of those ones that I specifically kept. And I'm going smack bang in the middle of both of you. I'm going with an 87.
Fair enough.
So that's it for the first American Pie film. We will be back, I'm guessing, later on this month, as we are late, with American Pie 2. Thank you for joining me, boys. I'm glad you enjoyed a first watch and a rewatch for the two of you. I didn't know how it was going to sit with you guys, so I'm glad you both enjoyed it. So thank you, dear listener, as always. We appreciate any and all listens. And as I say, we'll be back later on this month as we review the second film in the franchise. Cheerio.